Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. At some point, many of us start hearing messages about what this stage of life is supposed to look like. Slow down, be careful, stay in your lane, act your age. My guest today doesn't seem particularly interested in any of that. Nancy has been a nurse, educator, hospice specialist, volunteer, mother, grandmother, writer, and storyteller. She's faced addiction, loss, family challenges, health struggles, and more than a few unexpected plot twists. At 85, she's still writing books, chasing ideas, collecting stories, and looking for what's possible next. Along the way, some of our own dreams get tucked into the background, sometimes forgotten, sometimes abandoned, definitely postponed. Nancy's story is a reminder that the next chapter doesn't arrive because of our age. It arrives because we're willing to stay curious enough to keep turning the page. This conversation wanders through hospice rooms, recovery, family, creativity, resilience, and the surprising places purpose can be found. Listen now to my conversation with Nancy Jason Ensley. Many women spend decades doing what needs to be done, raising families, building careers, caring for others, and carrying responsibilities that leave little room for the dreams they had to tuck away. My guest today believes we actually have two jobs in life. There's the job that pays the bills, and then there's the work that calls to us from somewhere deeper, the dream, the passion, the thing we would do even if nobody paid us. Nancy has spent a lifetime serving others in healthcare as a nurse, educator, consultant, hospice specialist, and community volunteer. Alongside that work, she nurtured another calling, writing. What began at 8 years old became a lifelong companion through seasons of joy, loss, faith, family, and service. Now, in this chapter of life, she's exploring what happens when experience, wisdom, and creativity finally meet. Nancy Jason Ensley, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast, where we are embracing the journey.
Thank you, Agnes, so much for having me. Hello, everyone. Nice to meet you.
There we go. Now you say we have two jobs.
Yes.
Where did that realization come from for you?
Very early, I had quite a violent, very difficult childhood. I got to stay with my grandmother, who was from Hungary, and she had lost two husbands, and she raised her children alone. She was born as a gypsy. Gypsies were people that farmed and lived in very frank, moving down the mountains in Hungary. Her from birth until you walk as a toddler, you work. Work was a part of your personality, expected. It was honored, and so she transmitted that to me, and my sisters. If she said, "Nancy, I need you to ride the hills of New Jersey," that's where I was born, "ride the hills of Jersey, I don't care how hot it is, on your old bike and go get me some coffee." And she'd give me the money and I'd bring it back and she'd say, "Oh, I forgot," in her Hungarian language. I forgot you go again. Now, you go right now." And I never argued, not, and I grew up with a sense. My parents worked. My mom was a piano teacher. She graduated from Juilliard. She was a concert pianist, amazing. My father was a photographer, amazing, his job. They went to work. They worked. They worked, worked, worked. So I had no sense of, it was a gift to have a job. So that followed me throughout my life. And when I was held back from working, when I first got married in the 60s, you were the wife, the mother, the housekeeper, the get dressed up after the kids are in bed, because I get home at 10 and you will have dinner. And I never, there was a little part of me that said, "But I'm a nurse. I went to school for 5 years." But that person shut off because I was told, when I was told to work, that's what I did. But beneath all that, there was a passion for writing, a passion for reading. And I just had to find a place for that. So I volunteered. I volunteered for to give injections. I volunteered to take blood pressures. I volunteered for anything, civil emergency training group, anything I could do to volunteer that would fit into the life that I was being told I was going to live. That doesn't mean you lose your passion. I think there's buried in, especially in women, because we multitask. And so we have this broad look of our, whatever our lives' boundaries are, we have this look of, I can do more. I can do the wash, I can change the kids, I can go to the store, I can put the groceries, I can cook, I can clean, I can do all those things. Not that men can't, but men are much more focused and allowed to be that way. And so, I think buried in a lot of women, even if it's the passion to knit or the passion to paint, whatever it is, you have to find that niche to do it, even if it's for a moment a day. And so I found that writing saved my life, allowed me to live all these years, allowed me to share experiences that I may or may not have had had I not had the life that was sent to me. So all of those things made me who I am. My husband thinks I'm schizophrenic. He says, "You never stop. You, what's this and this and this? And now you're doing podcasts. And now you're, what are you doing? You're 85 almost." And I said, "I'm not done. And if I'm done, somebody will let me know. But until I'm done, I have seen people in hospice, I'm telling you. And as I have seen people all of a sudden do one last thing. I'll never forget this man who said to me, he was in his last stages, agonal breathing, etc. All of a sudden, there was a hurrah moment. And it was when his family said, it's okay to take the bus, it's okay to go. He woke up. He said, "Give me my wallet. Give me my wallet." And I said, "You woke up with your wallet? Oh, okay. Gave him his wallet. He gave me $5. He said, "I used to rob the basket at church. I cannot leave without paying it back." Took three breaths, waited till everyone was gone. A lot of men do that, some women too. Waited till they were gone. They had already said goodbye. And took two breaths, smiled, holding his wallet, and me holding his $5. Isn't that something? You never know. You never know when your last hurrah is going to be. I've seen people in accidents that you never think will make it. And I don't know what it is. Yes, it's a force, it's a dimension. There's a beautiful CD that, or DVD that they play. It's called Transition in Hospice. There is a point in when your life is ending where you're looking at this world and the, whatever other world you think there is that we don't know is or isn't. And there's a dynamic that's pulling you both ways. And someone can call, and then you can take that breath and go there, or you'll wait. I've seen people wait 5 days without eating, drinking, or anything. They're waiting for something. Isn't that amazing? I mean, there's, you never know when you have your last 2 moments to do something that you always wanted to do and never was able to. So don't be afraid to take a risk. I was a little shy kid. I thought nobody loved me. I had PTSD and I had abandonment issues, and there wasn't any counseling for me. I got to stay with my grandmother, and the tire swing was in her yard. And I wrote a poem about it because it meant to me that I could go as high as I could go, almost high enough to go over the branch. That means overkill. And to see if my parents were coming home. They had left. And then I'd go down. And then I'd really have to work really hard to get back up again. And I never could get over the branch, but because something would pull me back. And then I'd spin. And the world would look crazy. And then I was dizzy and I felt sick. And I took life as being that, like the tire swing. It meant you never know who you need somebody to push you. You can't quite get up high enough. You always want to go beyond what's there, and sometimes you can't. Something pulls you back. Just like my husband says, you're taking care of the kids, the house, and make dinner, and that's what you're going to do. And I said, okay. I'll wash the diapers by hand. Whatever you want me to do, I want peace. And so I did that. But in the back, there's a person in a costume that's waiting for me to discover it again. Don't ever, ever say, oh, I'll never get to do that. I'll never get to do that. I'll never fill my bucket list. I've forgotten half of what I need to know. And everybody has a story, and you have a story. Everyone has a story. And I hope that when I have a thought, you see the back with all the books. That looks nice, right? Up here is a mess. There are notes and journals and sticky notes and all kinds of things about when I write it down, it seems quite different than what's up here. And sometimes I put it away for a while, especially if I'm upset about something. I have my upset journal and I hide it because I don't want people to think that I ever get upset. And so I take it out after a period of time and I think, what is your basic problem? What is causing you to feel this way? Resentful, angry, uncomfortable, fear. Fear is the basis for most feelings, good, bad, and indifferent. And a lot of times you have to write it to identify it and to work with it and find out where it came from if you need a professional help, whatever it needs to do that. Because if you can't address your fears and if they become heavy into how you respond to life and other people, it can keep you from being the person that whatever force there is meant you to be. And it doesn't matter how old you are, there's ways to be able to identify your passion. I've taken care of people that have cerebral palsy. I have friends that have lost had strokes and can't speak anymore or talk, but we find a board that they can maybe write or something they can do something with. And that's why having a relationship with someone, you need to see them. I see your smile. I see you're listening to me. There's a difference between hearing and listening. You know that. And you're listening to me. Your eyes aren't wandering around the room. You're not looking at your phone. You are listening and watching my body language and whatever I do. And yes, I talk with my hands because people in Jersey talk with their hands. And so that's always been there. But I'm so worried that because we have these things, these AI things, which are amazing and helpful, that we might be missing that contact, the part of listening that includes observation. And nurses cannot lose that. They cannot. And now nurses and doctors have AI so they can sit down, touch the patient, look at the patient, understand how their movements, their breathing, and everything. They don't have to type on something. AI is in the room and it records everything that's said in the room. And then there's someone they hire to review it instead of the scribe or her, the poor nurse. Typing, never touching a patient or getting close enough to smell, to breathe, to do all that. So, yes, use these amazing technologies in the way that gives the best answer to being a human being. Because if you discount human beings, if you discount, then you have a robot. And a robot doesn't have feelings and he doesn't write down what he feels and look at it and say, whoops, I need to work on that one. Or maybe they do, I don't know, but right now I don't see that. And yes, there's wonderful, amazing scientific things coming, but you don't want to lose that personal, that thing that human beings need to identify boundaries, to identify misconceptions, to identify a body language, to identify what you hear and see and hear, what you actually hear. If you said a sentence to me, and I say it back to you, I might have heard that quite differently than what you meant it to be. Sometimes I say to my kids, it sounds like you might want my advice. They say, no, Mom, I want you to listen. But when I say, I had a similar experience. Would you like to hear about that? That's different than advice. You get your advice across somehow, but find a way to communicate that way. So that's why I write, and I will write as long as I can, no matter how I need to do it. And I write in a lot of genres, yes, because I've been with teenagers. I've taught them at high school. I have a teaching degree. I've been with every, from baby, from infancy to death. And I have stories about each chapter in people's lives that I just can't not do something with it. I don't want to lose that thought. There's a squirrel out here. That squirrel, my husband feeds. That squirrel thinks he's a human. She's a human. It's a she. That squirrel flies. I swear. And I called it Sammy the flying squirrel. And it's not a flying squirrel, but flies from the oak tree to this and comes up. And when I'm right here, she chatters to me. She's saying, I want some peanuts. I don't know what you're doing right now. It's not important. I want some peanuts. Now she's had two babies and taught the babies to go up by the bird feeder. When she jumps from the roof to the bird feeder, she knocks the peanuts down for the kids. Isn't that amazing? That's a story.
It is, yeah.
It's a
Okay.
story. So there.
You have just covered off so many concepts that I think I'm just going to transcribe it and call it, the philosophy of life
Oh God. Okay. Well,
with
I don't know.
Nancy.
No, according to, yeah,
Okay.
not
Okay.
according to Jim.
I want to get a little bit specific. Insofar as you spent decades in healthcare, and I will also clarify, I love hospice stories. I was a hospice volunteer. I had a
Oh,
career
wow.
in residential elder care, and I was a
Oh.
hospice volunteer. So yeah, I get goosebumps right now just
I
sort of
do
saying that
too.
because yeah, some of the stories that you take away from hospice are, yeah,
Amazing.
amazing. So all these careers that were basically people in some of the most, as you just said, most vulnerable times of their lives. Did that sort of work shape the person and the writer that you became?
I'm glad you asked that. That's a wonderful way to put it. Yes, there are so many costumes that I have worn over life. The costume of the supervisor, the costume of the teacher, the costume of the grandmother and great grandmother, the costume of a person who has a terrible, had a terrible part of her life for 6 years, almost died, almost wanted to die. So all of those aspects, all the costumes that I've put on or taken off or thrown away or burnt kind of make me who I am. And I want each one of those things, whether they be difficult or easy or funny, I want them to continue to be part of me and remember that everyone has more to them than what you actually see. Everyone, no matter what, even if they are a really good person. My father was, the dynamic of that was, I saw these two amazing, intelligent people. My mother was very, very, she was an only child. She was had a, you know, a governess. She rang, played the piano when she was three. She was a concert pianist. She married my father, was a photographer in a small town, never got to finish school because he had to go to work. And I think that the disappointment and the intelligence that he had, He was outside. He was this amazing man. Everyone knew him, loved him, ushered in church, took little old ladies. He came into our house, and I think the boundaries of a house or something. I did ask him late in life before I got to take care of him and forgive him, by the way. He said, you will take care of this man, and you'll see another man in there. But that taught me that, yeah, you can be too, you can be, there's a lot to you. So many different iterations of both of my parents and my grandparent, all those people. And I used to watch for that. And I was in a variety show for 25 years, and I danced and I comicked and I got to do all kinds of things. And every time I put on a costume, I felt worthy because they clapped for me. And I had to be very, very careful and set that I didn't look for applause in everything I did. Because later, after I worked in hospice, I was in my 40s, almost 50. When I was a compliance officer, so they didn't want me there. I could have changed their contracts. I was working for the government at that time, and I had to do audits for their charting to match their charges. And so I decided I was going to volunteer to nurse at night so that I could learn what it was like to work as a nurse in hospice. But the difference was that that I learned if I put on a costume, that was just to be able to be comfortable in front of other people. Not the costume that you see, but how I presented myself. I never wanted to be a leader. No, I was a great follower. My grandma made me, you get on the bike 5 times a day, you are going to do what you're told. And I said, oh yeah, just tell me, I'll do it. But somehow I got in leadership roles. I have no idea why. I kind of, I was available to take a risk, okay? And when I did, and in my 40s, after hospice, I went and became a legal nurse consultant, by the way, terrified of lawyers. Why did I do that? I have no idea. I'm crazy. And so someone said to me, you are intimidating. And I thought, oh no, I'm nice, I'm funny, I love everybody, I'm nice. Even if I don't, I'm not doing something that's you'd think is nice, I'm nice. And they said, no, you never ever let anybody outperform you. And I thought, you know what? I had to think about that. I retired 3 times. The first time I retired, I wasn't done. But before I went back, I had to talk to a therapist and say, why would I be intimidating? And he said, tell me about your life in a week. And I worked well beyond 12 hours a day. 12 hours, raised a family, took care of my parents, took care of when they were failing, volunteered, had kids, took my daughter in when she had a divorce. My limits and boundaries were very unclear. And I had to think about that. I had to hold back. And so I go on LinkedIn very often because I have a niece who has amazing leadership. She goes all over the world and teaches people how to be a leader. And most of the time it is back off. You aren't the star. You make stars. And I thought, isn't that's hard to do, to go against your grain. But I didn't want to be seen that way. So yeah, you got to look at yourself sometimes when people, oh gosh, I was so hurt. I had dressed myself up into what I thought was this angel on earth. I wasn't. I had my moments. I had a volatile, kind of a volcanic temper that came out at the wrong times. I had an addiction that was terrible. And I almost lost my life to that. And it wasn't pills, it was alcohol. And I was introduced by my husband, my first husband. He never drank in my life before I married him at 22. And I found this thing. I have put a costume for anybody. I found this this thing that did something to me that made me feel worthy, pretty, smart, all the things I thought I wasn't, that I had to outperform for. And it almost killed me. And now I counsel women that have mental health and addiction problems. And I had one today, and we laughed more than we cried. We decided about if you have something that you need to tell someone, find someone you can trust and tell them. And make sure that, they're honoring what you told them. Because if keeping it inside sometimes doesn't make sense. And so, yeah, I got God back. God stayed by my side, got me through that. And after 42 years of never touching it again, 42 years, he gave me a husband that loves me, a husband that's totally different from me. And he shakes his head at times, and I don't blame him. And we have our moments, but we've stayed together. He sought me through, got me through so many rough times, and I got him through some rough time by honoring who, finding out who that person really was. So, yes, I've been blessed from whatever force there is out there. I've been blessed with, and I'm going to keep writing. I'm writing oh, and you know when I write from midnight till 3 in the morning. And
Oh my goodness.
I talk to my characters, my protagonists. Julie, I'm talking, my husband got used to it. He wears earplugs now. But he says, "Who are you talking to?" And I said, "It's Julie." He says, "Who's Julie? And who's here at 2 in the morning?" I said, "Julie is. And she's driving me crazy because she won't do what I tell her to do in this story. She wants to do her, you created this thing who doesn't want to do what you tell her to do. You better write it that way." And so, So you never know. You never know what you're going
So I love the fact that like, Julie is with you at 2 in the morning. But you were talking about a lot of years of costumes. Was the writing just traveling alongside? And what did it do for you if it was alongside all those years, or did it have to sort of disappear for a while, or
Yes. When I was in the midst of my addiction, I was losing, my kidneys were failing. I was divorced. I had lost my home. One of my children went with their father. I was losing everything. The only thing I had was my job as a nurse in charge of patients. And how did I get through that? That costume needed to be attended to. So I focused all my energy. I quit writing. I quit reading. I read a book a night now. I speed read like my father did. And I lost all those costumes. And I was naked in pain and fear. I remember begging God to let me drink again. And I tell you, I heard no. I don't know whether I was in a state where you hear things, hallucination, or what it was, but I swear I heard no. And I got up and I decided I needed to take some time off work. I was getting fearful that I might hurt patients. I was a head nurse for a neuro unit. And even the doctors said, "You're not sleeping enough. You look very tired and you've lost so much weight. What's wrong? Do you have cancer? Have you seen a doctor?" And I thought, oh my God, I didn't even see myself that way. No costume would fit me anymore, other than the one that was left, the skin and bones that he said no. And then I took out, it was called the closet. I had started it. I took out the closet. A little girl, I used to hide in the closet because I was so afraid and I hated it. It was dark. So I ran out of the closet to save my mother. And that became part of me. And so I thought, I can't call it the closet because I'm not there anymore. So I started writing my memoir, The Tire Swing, because the tire swing was a point in my life where I kind of understood life. So that brought me back to writing, and it helped with my sobriety, with my recovery, and it helped me find people that I trusted and support and professional support that got me back into a passion and allowed me to continue being a nurse because I could have lost my license. And I loved it. I loved it. I still love it. You're never not a nurse. You can retire and people call you about, I'm constipated, whatever. You're never, I know you know that. And
I was
so,
never a nurse, but yes,
you
I
know,
know
but even
that.
what you do, you never end that passion. It's there. So, yes.
So did you know that writing was going to be that lifeline?
Yes. Well,
Okay.
at a
Okay.
point. When I finally identified my greatest fear was my relationship to my father. And I know there was a black area in my life. And I was with a psychiatrist. This is hilarious. I couldn't, I was very, very, I was messed up. And I came to him, and one day I was holding a stuffed animal and squeezing it. And he says, "Who is that?" And I said, "That's my father." And I'm so scared. And I opened up to him as what had happened to me. And it was a terrible experience for a 14-year-old to go through, or younger. We only had 3 rooms in our house, and we only had a toilet. And my mom slept on it was like a metal bed with an army blanket in the kitchen. And dad slept in the big bed in our room, where my sister was in a crib. You couldn't open the drawers to a dresser. It was so close, and that was close to a bed. But I think he slept with me. And that opened up the door to a horrible, horrible experience for a young girl. And I won't go in depth about it. It's in there. And it got me back to writing that book. And once I wrote that book, I never stopped because it became my therapy.
I bet. Yeah.
Sometimes your passion becomes your therapy. And I think people, if you have, everyone has a story. Write, just write. Nobody needs to see it. You can throw them away, put them in a box, do whatever you need, but you will find out something about yourself that you may never ever get to know. And you might find it in a note that you write. My friend told me, she said, "I can't write a book." I said, "You have a story. It's amazing." We were nurses training together. She went through horrible things. And she said, "I can't write." And I said, "Where do you write something down? Where do you write something?" A calendar she has with big things. She writes something every day on that calendar. And if she needs to say more, there is enough room. She has a paper underneath it. And she says, "I saved all those calendars." I said, "You have your book." So I do ghostwriting. I do help people to write their books,
Okay.
which is so much fun. That's not.
Now, writing is a creative outlet. There are lots of creative outlets. Is it the same? Does everybody have something? It may not be writing. It could be art. It could be knitting. It could be, I don't know, you tell me. But it's just that creative outlet that helps us deal with all the crap that's going on, either inside our lives or inside ourselves or whatever.
I so agree. There are so many things that people would not identify as a passion or a talent. I have someone that knits all their meetings. She has to knit. She's amazing. That's what she does. I have someone else that journals voraciously every day. I have my sister who now has dementia. She's the most delightful person on earth, and I'm losing that beautiful, wonderful woman. She paints so beautifully, Agnes. She used to do things called forever flowers, and they were on little easels, small pictures of these most beautiful flowers, and on the back was a poem because they never died, and you didn't have to water them. They were always there. And we got her paints out for her. We said, we don't care what you paint. If it's hard to paint or if it's hard to do, start painting again. She said, I don't know what you mean. I don't know where anything is. I can't stop telling me what to do. This is not my sister. But whatever she has is making her do that. She painted a picture for her grandson who begged her to do it. It told the story of how she feels. It was mountains with a little bit of sunshine and darkness below it, and a river that was really running. And it told her how she feels right now. Isn't that amazing? Her putting things on a calendar, she plants seeds and they grow. She can keep things alive, my friend. There's people that you can't even call it a hobby. They walk the dogs. They watch other people's dogs. They rescue cats that are feral cats, and so that they don't have babies that die, she spends her money to take them to a clinic to get them fixed. Her own money. She doesn't have a lot of money. That's her life, her passion. You walking. There's an old man down here. Well, he's probably younger than me. But anyhow, he rides his bike. And when he rides his bike, he waves. He lets go of the handle. He's very bent over and set every day he does. There's a lady down here, very wealthy, probably in her 70s. She runs miles, and she, her running, she doesn't see the rest of the world. She doesn't say hi. She doesn't smile at you or anything. But if you really look at her, she is in love with what she's doing. And you don't need to invade that space because it's hers and it belongs to her. So you rocking in a rocking chair, holding babies. There's people that volunteer to hold babies in the hospital. You know that. What you do, that you're helping with people in their geriatric times. That's amazing to do exercises. That's just, even if you can barely do anything, it's amazing. If you can lift your leg a couple of times, it's great. There's machines that can help you. Exercise is an amazing way to keep you healthy, your mind and body. There's ones that you can't, people look at ants and they think, oh, I gotta watch ants. They're amazing. They work, 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 work. People follow birds everywhere.
What I'm appreciating is, I mean, I sort of started out by asking about this creative outlet, but I realize as you're talking, I had put walls, I put a definition around creative, and you're explaining, and I really appreciate it. I hope our listeners are appreciating that,
I
you
hope
don't
so.
have to write the great Canadian novel or the great American novel. You don't have to
Yeah.
knit an amazing beautiful gown, whatever it is, but just whatever, I guess whatever gives you a zen. I can't remember who I was talking to late recently, and they were telling me something, and I said, it sounds like it's a really zen place for you. And they went, yeah, just realizing that whatever sort of calms you,
Yes.
pleases you, that sort of thing. Do
Yeah.
you meet, seeing as how you've just given away your age. I know you've met not women that are younger than you. Do you ever find women who just say, oh, God, that died a long time ago? I just they really feel that they can't.
Yes, young. I think the genre of our world right now is there's a little hope missing. People don't stay in jobs like they used to for 20 years. There's so much news. So much heaviness in the news, and it's hard. I love it when they have a humanized story at the end. They should start with that. Don't wait till the end after you tell them your food won't, you can't afford food, you can't afford gas, you can't afford anything. This is what's happening. I've found young people. And I just love talking to young people. That's why I wrote Orphans. It's a young adult book about two boys that have a humongous loss and they come together. They're from other parts of the United States, and they come together and get into a thing. So, but I love talking to teenagers. It's amazing to they're in the moment. They don't project a long term. My grandson said, "I'm retiring at 52," and that's very similar to his age group. He's in his 30s, the 20s to 30s. Don't look for long term. A lot of things long terms, long term school, long term anything, marriages, long term anything, and so they have a whole different perception of the world than I have. So I do see a, and I understand it. There's so much information all over to try and realize what's really factual, what's really real, what really pertains to you is way too big than you should even be worrying about when you're in your 20s and starting up another segment of your life. So their chapters are much different than my chapters.
Yeah. Do you see a way back?
Yes. Yes, I do see a way back. I
Okay.
think education, we need, between healthcare and education, we need a big historical review to look at the patterns of our education and how important that is. Because if we start taking from those two things, we will not be able to move forward and overcome some of the things that are happening now. We are such a young country. We don't honor the graphs of history, how we need to look at those. Oh, whoops, that happened. That happened in the 60s, and we should have known it. We should have watched it and watched the path that it took. So, yes,
That's
I.
interesting because that's one of the things that my grandson and I talk about is
Did you?
like, and I hear people on the news and I go like, are you that young or have you not looked at history enough? Because if it happened in my life, it's not like
Yes.
it's ancient. Well, I hope it's not ancient history, you know.
No.
But yeah,
Oh.
that's interesting how you just.
I think your grandson, he's understanding that what you're talking about is important. You know, it's important that you have that jewel of history that you can remember and bring into the present, and maybe say a couple of these signs are really, we should have looked at that back then. We should have learned from that.
And that's the big thing is let's learn from that. And
Learn from that. Yeah,
apparently
that'd be
we're
good.
incapable of
Well,
that.
we teenagers, our
Oh no,
country.
I meant even at our generation,
No,
you
no,
know,
no.
it's like
No.
apparently the powers that be are not learning no matter how, what we're screaming into the
Oh, we're in headbands, whatever.
ether.
But we are a young country. We're infants compared to other countries, and they've been through this. If you look at the Sweden and Denmark and those, they use Montessori now. They education. They don't have nursing homes like we have. They view their health care. You need health care, and they use their taxes for what they need. But it took years and years and years of history to get where they are right now, and they hold on to it because it's a
Well,
blessing.
and I don't know if you know this, but I'm in Canada, so we're even younger than you folks.
Oh yes, you are. Well, yes, you are. But in Canada, I've learned things from. We used to travel because we had a boat, and we go up to Canada.
Oh, nice.
And I talking to people, you honor history a little bit better than we do, because you. I don't know whether it was the French culture or the English, whoever settled in Canada had a lot bigger view of how much history means. And you have a little bit softer, a little bit softer attack on the present because of your honor. Somewhere in your genes, it seems that the people that I've met from Canada have a little softer take on how important it is to research something before you make a decision.
And you know, I'm just going to stay silent now and let you wax poetic about Canadians. No, I'm just I want to bring it back to our audience. What would you say to a woman who says, I don't even know what my dream is anymore? Like, because she's so spent with being wearing all those costumes that you talked about.
Okay, first, you have to trust someone. You have to trust someone that you can talk to, and you can say anything you want to say. You can use anger, you can use whatever emotion you need to tell that person, or a professional, someone that you can just let it all hang out. Somewhere in there, the uncut diamond is in there. You just have to get all the other stuff that's uncovering. It may be in a cave, it may be buried for life, and you may never find it. Or you may not know what it is, and you've discounted it because it isn't in your, it's never, you've never met anyone that does that. You've never ever done it before. You've never attempted it. I would say just write down how you feel that day, how you feel, and look in your feelings. Doesn't have to make sense, doesn't your spelling or grammar doesn't have to be good. Write it down, because I'm telling you, when I look back at what I write, or even what you write, I picked out of what you wrote the important parts that meant something to me that I never realized, because it's the way you said it, that I'm okay. I had someone tell me my bucket list was to do a flash mob dance. I love to dance. And so here I am in my 80s, and my daughter got together the steps, and there were 11 of us, and went to a mall in Tennessee on Sunday afternoon at 2 in front of whoever was there. And we had t-shirts that had a cute little saying on it, and I got to do it. And I was telling somebody, I had gone with someone for her cardiology appointment. I was telling the nurse, she says, "I love to dance." I said, "I did a flash mob." "A flash mob? You did? You did at your age? You did that? Did you really? Did you really?" "No one does that." I said, "Oh yeah, people do that. 11 of us did that. And I hope other people saw the video and said, look at that old lady. One of them goes the wrong way every time. The other one, the one of them, the younger one, she said, I don't dance and I'm not going to do it." And I said, "Yes, you are, Tam." And she stayed in the back. We had 3 rows, and she stayed in the back, and she did moved her feet a little bit. She looked bored to tears, but she loved it. So you never know what you're going to be able to do if you're exhausted. Exhaustion is a disease. It's a disease because if it becomes your life constant, you get no break from it. You don't sleep well, you don't dream well, you don't get REM sleep, you don't rest, you don't take a nap, you don't get in your car and say, "I'm not telling you where I'm going. I'll call you when I get back. I just want to go. I go to the park, Stone Park down here. I can't walk as far as I used to. I was in a very bad accident. I loved walking and running. I used to run, but I can't. But I go there and I watch other people doing, playing wiffle ball or whatever that new thing is. And I thought, oh God, I used to play tennis. I want to do that. Oh gosh, maybe I could have been a great tennis player." I'm thinking, no, we can barely walk. But that is my moment of feeling okay about who I am right now. And everyone needs those sabbaticals from the confines of their whatever situation they're in. I used to run clinics over 11 clinics on the east side of Toledo, which were the poorest side of Toledo. 11 clinics. And we would give free shots, and it was the grandmothers taking care of these little babies. And you know what? Most of them, so poor, so old, this has brought something in their life that they didn't think they had, to be able to take care of it and find community services, that find people that you need to talk to that can help you take care of that baby. So you never know what's going to happen in your life, what you're going to get to do. You never know. My kids say, "No, grandma, you can't babysit the kids, but you can hold them while we're there. We don't want you to fall going up and down the stairs. You know, you're rickety. And I say, not that rickety, but they see me as old as I am. And they don't want me to get hurt. And they don't want me to ever, their kids, I would never do that. So if they put boundaries on me, that doesn't mean I can't get on the floor and play with them. That doesn't mean that I can tickle them and spoil them and love them.
And get
And
out a whole different set of co costumes now.
oh, costumes, yes, all of it. And it's just so you never know. So don't, audience, there's a great, I teach guided imagery. I learned to do that and meditation. Anybody can do that. Anybody can do that. Because right now, if I'm nervous about doing a podcast, you have made me feel very comfortable. There's different ways of, feeling and how I express myself. I'm always high, okay, when I do speak. And I am at the ocean, walking in the ocean in the sand. I can hear the birds. I can feel the sands under my feet. They don't hurt anymore. I can feel the breeze. I can hear that water. And it's nobody else is there. And I can slow down, calm my voice. Don't talk so fast. I am there. You don't know I'm there. And that is a great help. If you've got eight kids and you're working yourself to death, two jobs, and you think there's nothing going to get out of this cave that you're in, your mind can. And that doesn't cost you anything. There are people free to teach you. Or you got to get, just take a walk. Get somebody that can fill in for you for a moment and just breathe. There's some exercises. We don't breathe. When I'm talking, I don't take a deep breath. And we don't take a deep breath. And breathing heavily in and out, the whole breath can kind of open up the door a little bit. Whatever tiny little thing. Okay, if you have to eat chocolate, if you need chocolate bars, and the doctor says you're diabetic and you can't have them. There are no sugar chocolate bars. And if you need one a day to get you through the day, then get one. And just check your sugar afterwards. Just when someone tells you you can't have it and you think you need it, find a way to get it or something similar. Write. Write whatever way you can. Dictate, write, use your hands. Sign language, whatever will work. I cannot hear. I'm deaf in this ear. During COVID, masks were on, and I didn't realize that I read everybody's lips.
Course, yeah.
Realize that. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm deaf. I'm deaf. So I had to get these very expensive hearing aids that are transitional, that make this side of my brain tell this ear that it hears from this ear. Isn't that amazing? Amazing. But I didn't know that I read lips from childhood on.
Until we
Because I had,
covered them, yeah.
some of the guys talk down. I don't know what it is about guys, when they're doing their podcast. And I said, you need to, I like to see your face. It's a wonderful face. Could you just turn a little bit and look at me? So, because I think part of the time I still read lips because I want to. I want to.
Yeah.
You're looking at me. You make you your expressions are telling me something about you. And when you talked about your grandson, you look 10 years younger to me. To me. And the smile on your face and the touching your heart tell me how much that means to you. That he uses you and trusts you.
I've done one podcast interview, like when we first started and your camera wasn't on yet. And I was sort of saying, oh, do you have a camera? I have done one podcast interview where she didn't want to use her camera. And I found it so awkward because part of a conversation is being able, I mean, as many miles apart as you and I are, is being able to see the faces, read stuff like that.
Oh
But
my God. Yes.
we've sort of bounced around a little bit, but what I
Okay.
think I'm hearing, I'm going to put words in your mouth, is, we talk about a dream, but it's a passion. It's what lights you up. Maybe it's what calms you. You were just talking about, your guided meditations. Just whatever gets you in touch with yourself, maybe. I don't know. I'll let you expand on that.
Yes, it's a dimension. It's a dimension that's there for anyone to take. It could be cooking. And okay, here's the recipe. Here's the recipe. But you added something that someone said, this is different than something I've ever eaten. That will open up. That will light you up. That will light someone up because it's you opening up a door that you didn't realize that you had. That you're taking a risk to present a food to someone that they may or may not like because you changed it. And so, those light up moments can be so flat so quickly. Hang on to them for dear life and blow them up if you need to. You can write a cookbook. Some people could write an amazing cookbook because they never measure anything, they make it their dish. No one else makes it that good. My ex-husband's grandmother made apple pie. She made her pie with bacon grease because they couldn't afford Crisco, or maybe it wasn't around. And it was the best, flakiest pie ever. And she never
And they
told
had the
anyone.
soup can beside the on the
Yes,
stove.
there it was.
Poured
And yes,
it
I'm honest.
in
And it
every
was amazing. And it you should see her light up when we said, oh, this is the best. What do you do to this pie? And she says, I love it. I put
Yes.
love in it. So you never know. You never know what you're going to do. Some people make airplanes, out of paper, and you have to know exactly how to put that so it will fly. And some people, grandpa makes airplanes that fly. That's what he does. And that light up moment, don't let that go by. Live in it. Love it. Explode it. Because you don't have to have any formal education. You don't have to have. It's just amazing how some people survive life with the tiniest grain of mustard seed that can keep them getting through what they ever have to get through. Poverty, God knows what, disability, all of those things. Strokes. I had a woman, I was a neuro nurse for a period of time, and I had a woman who all she could say was, there, after her stroke. She was a brilliant woman. She had education and everything. That's it. That's it. There. And so everyone would call her there. She was Emma there, Emma there. And our doctor, vascular doctor I work with, he says, Emma there is coming in today. And I said, oh, I want to run over. Can I come? I'm done here. Can I come over and see her? I love her. She's always smiles. She came into the room and said, hello, Dr. Dasik. How are you doing after 7 years? Because she listened, listened, listened. And you should have seen him and me and her. It was the most precious. It was amazing. Did we hear that? Hello, Dr. Dasik. How are you? After all those years, and I don't, she went to speech therapy then because they could see some progress. Something happened. Something grew. Something took over. And there she was. So you never know when that moment's going to happen. She was 86.
And our listeners are all of an age. None of us are guaranteed tomorrow. What do you want women to understand in terms of time being finite? Only we don't know what that means. They still have time to make changes. What do you want to say to them to get that across? that you have time to make changes.
What I would want to say is don't let society, don't let people who put you into a portrait of who you're supposed to be. This is grandma, this is mom, this is, we get identified by those things. Or this is a nurse, but that isn't the only thing that's to me. And if you get stuck into that thing, in that into that role, if you there's a little part of you that says, well, that isn't all of me. There's a lot more to it. And I want to show you what I can do. Or take the risk of letting somebody know that there's a lot more to you than even the best mom ever still has some things in her. And so sometimes that role that you play that makes you feel, it fills your ego. Don't let your ego put aside your miracle. So if you've got, everyone has one. Everyone has many, many. And every once in a while, you got to listen to you, listen to you, no matter how much drama is going on around you, because those little moments will come when I wanted to be an airline steward. After school, there were only a few things that a woman could do in the 50s, late 50s and 60s.
And you had to
And
be a nurse to be an airline stewardess in those days.
yeah, definitely, definitely. I had to have that. And I wanted to be a doctor. I went to med school to start out. I wanted to be applauded. I wanted to be honored. I wanted to have power. And I wanted to be a doctor. I went three quarters. I lost my financial background to take care of my mother. She was very ill. So I came back, rescued her again. And I thought, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? I want to be a doctor. I have to be a doctor. It's powerful. And so I was the last person taken in Toledo Hospital School of Nursing, 3-year program. And I thought, I'll be a nurse, and then I'll be nice to nurses when I'm a doctor. I won't treat them bad because I know what it's like to be a nurse. And I fell in love with it. I never knew that flower was there. I wanted the whole bouquet, and the flower was the prettiest part of it. And I got to do, I got, there was, I got to save lives. I got to be brave enough to argue my point. Just watch your delivery. Everyone has an opinion. Everyone has a right to an opinion. It's the delivery that makes the difference on whether it's going to be heard in the way you want it heard. So, yeah, take a little risk every once in a while. Write down the pros and cons of what you're thinking of doing. Say, I never thought I could babysit. I never thought I wanted to work in a nursery. I never thought I wanted to buy an Uber, be an Uber driver. And go ahead, do it part time. Tell your husband or tell whoever. Find a way out of the boundaries that might make you forget that there's a gem in there. No matter what, how old you are, who would say that I would do a flash mob dance? I wanted to skydive. I wound up having lots of surgery, so all that metal kept me from doing it. My grandson was going to partner with me and skydive because I was terrified of heights. And I thought, I've got to jump out of a plane where there's no way you cannot come back. They don't tether you. I never got to do that. So I thought, I can still dance no matter what, not near as good as I wanted to. But I begged them to let me do it because I had to do one of the things in my bucket list before I take off. And my friend Muriel, who was my sponsor, she was raised in vaudeville. I wrote a book about her, Penny for Your Thoughts. She was amazing from 5 years old. And she taught me how to dance. We were in the variety show together. And she, I was with her on the night that she was agonal breathing in hospice, kneeling with her son, who was terrified to tell her it's okay to go. Terrified. I said, I'll hold your hand when you say, Grant, Mom, you can take the bus. Up on the, they had little TVs in the hospice room, and it was 2 in the morning, but they were replaying a baseball game. First, it was the sports, I guess, late at night. She loved baseball. She loved it. She knew the averages. She knew the names of the players. She knew any baseball game. She didn't care who was playing. Okay, she's taking, doing, it's called chain strokes. So you breathe for a while and then you stop. And you wait, 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 wait. And all of a sudden she gets another one. That can take days. And it's horrible. It's very hard for the family, hard for him. He's like, oh God. He finally said, okay, mommy, we take the bus. She sat up, opened her eyes, and she said, damn it, I'm watching the ball game. Took two breaths. I'm watching the ball game, eyes like this. She wasn't looking at either of us. We weren't in the room with her. The ball game was. And she took some breaths, smiled, and died. You never know when that moment's going to happen. And you never know how long you're going to hang around. So use every day as a gem to find, to polish that gem and be able to use it, because it's really important. It is. Just don't be afraid. Don't be afraid when other people tell you you can't. That's when you really, really need to know that you could. That you could.
There we go. What haven't we talked about that you want our audience, midlife women, to think about? You've given some amazing tips, for lack of a better word, incentives.
Because I'm a healthcare worker, please take care of your physical health. We put aside our physical health for our caretaking thing inside of us. Women do, you know we do. We multitask, we run the kids to school, we do this, we do that, do this, do this, do this, do this. And we forget that we didn't go to the dentist. We didn't hear teeth clean. You need some physical health. Because I have put that aside a lot of times, and it didn't fare well with my later on years. Yes, take care of your physical health. Take care of your whatever spiritual health you have, whatever takes you out of the moment for takes you out of the moment, whatever you call it. You don't have to call it anything. No name, no name. Just whatever. Oh, I need a piece of chocolate. And in that few minutes that you're chewing a piece of chocolate and you think it's okay to do it, then do it. I need to take a drive. I'm sorry, I can't make dinner. I gotta take a drive. Whatever it is, do that. And write, if you can, or dictate, or whatever. And find support for whatever you need, whether it's mental, physical, psychological, anything. There are support, and there are friends that are very good of not gossiping, are trustworthy, are willing to be your friend enough to say, that's not right. And do it in a way where you hope that you hit a nerve that they'll listen. My friend tells me all the time, she tells me exactly what she thinks I'm doing. She says, you're doing it again. And I thought, oh, brother, I thought I hid that pretty well. You're doing it again. And yes, I don't know. I have no idea what tomorrow's going to bring. I don't want to go back to the box that I put the difficult things in my life and open that and let it be an albatross that hangs there like a rock, because it's done. And take whatever you can from it. The good things about it, and forgive. Forgive. That doesn't mean you condone. Someone's hurt you. I've heard people that have lost their children to a gun battle. Forgive the person who shot them, because they can't carry the rock. There's sadness. They'll always carry that of resentment and unforgiveness, because it's a horrible disease. That can lead you in a lot of bad directions, worse than the original crime. So forgive. Write a letter and don't mail it. Write a letter and mail it. Call them up and say, how you doing? Maybe they don't want to talk to you. I write poems and prayers, and I send them to tons of people twice a week. Sometimes they're funny. Sometimes I spill coffee all over me, and I do that. And I love poetry. I write a lot of poetry. I've had some published, and they're writing poems back. Never wrote a poem in their life, but they want to. Oh, I can write a poem, and some of them are. My son wrote me a poem. He's never written me a poem. He's a big executive somewhere, and he wrote me a poem that was brought tears to my eyes. It was amazing. It's up there.
Just gonna say.
Yeah. So yeah, you never know how you're going to touch someone's little nerve that's hidden in there, and say, "I wrote a poem," and they're so proud of themselves. I said, "That's better than my poem by far." So you never know when you're going to influence somebody. I had a doctor that was a football player and mean, and he never said any nurse's name. Go get me this. Do this order. Where are the orders? Take rounds with me. Never their name. Never. And they got used to it. He read my book for some reason, The Tiger Swing. And he came up to me one day and he said, "Nancy." I thought, "Oh God, he knows my name. They have a name tag on there." They all have name tags back then. And he said, "Nancy, I read your book and it made me understand that there's a person behind the name tag. And it's very
Oh.
important that I know who that is." So he was better. He made mistakes. He still yelled and screamed some orders, but they saw a difference. And he saw a difference in how they, "Oh, can I make rounds with you?" No one ever asked. They didn't want to make rounds with you. So you don't know who you're going to touch. I was in line with Christmas time. Lines are long, not enough help. Everybody's tired. Everybody's grumpy. Rawr, rawr, all rawr. And here's a little girl, a young girl, 12, 13. She had a bag of money and she had bought five things for evidently her family. And she didn't know how much she had. And she's counting out these pennies and nickels and stuff. And everybody's groaning and moaning and moaning. And I'm watching her. And she had tears in her eyes because she saw that she didn't have enough money. Which one does she take away? And I said, "You have enough money." And I gave her the other $2. And those people turned into these elves and these angels and never grumbled, nothing. For a few moments, there was a light in the room. Not what I did, but how she looked. She didn't have to make a choice that no 12-year-old should have to make. So you don't know. I mean, you touched me today with your face, your story about your grandson, the things that you do, and how gracious you are to let me go on and on and on and on and on, and still get what you need for your poem. I hope that someone out there said, "You know, maybe I'll try that. Maybe I'll try that." And if
Well,
somebody
you're
says,
not done yet.
"Oh, I'm not done yet."
I want you to
Okay.
talk about your books. That's I was looking
Oh.
away and I hope you didn't think I was tuning you
Oh,
out,
no. No,
but
no, no.
I can't get over all the different genres that you write in. So
Because everybody asks me this, evidently, and I know that to be true, all the books that I've read, there are certain dynamics that people may make bestsellers. And there is a group of books that I want to do before I leave or am not able to write anymore. I love the 18th century. I need to write a trilogy, and that's going to take me away from a lot of things, then so that I can research that and do it. But I've lived so many parts of lives. And my grandson, I listened to other people. My grandson was drawing pictures. He's a great artist. And I said, "What is that thing with five arms and googly eyes?" And he said, "That's an alien." And he said, "Grandma, I want you to write a sci-fi book." And I said, "I don't know. I've been to a planetarium and I think it's amazing up there. And I'd love to take a spaceship up there, but I don't know anything about it." He says, "You don't need to make it up." And I thought, well, I believe that any fiction should have believable things in it because you can lose someone so bad that they can't get into the story. So I had to do research because he wanted me to write a sci-fi. And I never thought about ever writing. I had written about a little boy that was the product of someone from outer space and a lady that made hats, Bernard, Bartholomew, Bosselby, these three B,
Love
and
that. Yeah.
a series. And he, my daughter, my sister did the artwork. She
Okay.
did the artwork. She did the artwork on the tire swing, and they never let people that aren't contracted with them. But this was so beautiful because it told a story. She was 4 years old. How did she remember how that looked? So they let him do that. So you just never know. And yes, the memoir was really important to me. It was a
So the
part of
memoir was the tire swing.
that was the tire swing. The memoir
Okay.
is the tire swing that was used to be the closet. And that tells a story, hopefully, that I can help people. I was told by a support group that I'm with that if I mention anything about the system that people use to help them with alcoholism, that it endangered a tradition, that we aren't to make money off of anything that has to do
Oh,
with
okay.
it. I never mentioned what it was, but I used a support group. So all the money that comes from this goes in their basket. I said, I'll fix it. That's what happened. I'm not going to make any money. And so, yes, I have mysteries. I love mysteries. And I have an ending and a beginning. And I have to make the story get there somehow with suspense. How am I going to keep them just interested enough and yet not know the ending? So, Mitre Corners, Rainbow in December. Mitre Corners has a lot about healthcare. Because it's stories that doctors, nurses, lab techs, anybody in healthcare I've ever had told me stories and let me use their stories, not their name. And it's a compilation of that. But if there's a murder story in there and there's a romance in there, all kinds of story.
Indigo
Okay. And
35 sounds like
yeah,
something
Indigo
that.
35 is space. That is it. Did you know that at the very farthest, it's 1,000 light years. You would be 1,000 years old if you could go through a wormhole to get to these five planets. They are there. And the middle planet's the size of the Earth. It's kind of got a blue hue around it, and it has two suns the same distance from the planet as Earth. So if our Earth is disintegrating, can they get there? Because maybe life could live there, like we know it. And they have to go to Mars as a base, and they have to get through a wormhole. And a wormhole, you can't have negative and positive because you'll blow up. So you have to have negative and negative to get through it. So that's the, and I believe that the backstory of your character is important so you know them. You can see them, you understand them, because if they change, you say, no, don't do that. No, what are you doing? Or yes, go there.
Is
Could
it
you?
Julie that you're yelling at at 2 in the morning?
I want everybody to, yes, Julie. She's hopeless. And so, and then a penny for your thoughts is an ebook. Okay. And that is the story of Muriel, who was my sponsor, who is in the vaudeville. And
Okay.
it's her story. She's passed away. But a penny for, she used to say, a penny for your thoughts. You're coming to talk to me. And I'm telling you, I don't know. I might be crazy, but every time I would go to work in the morning, early morning, knew I was going to have a horrible day, there would be a penny next to my car. I found pennies where I just vacuumed, and there's a penny there because she is up there saying, okay, there you go again. I've told you not to do that. Or yes, go ahead. Because they are out of blue. They're from heaven, pennies from heaven. So a penny for your thoughts stays there. Just
Well, then you got Isla, you've got 3B, Bernard
yeah,
Bartholomew
Bartholomew Bosselby, oh my
Bosselby. Those are
word.
children's, are they mostly?
Yes, they are children's. Yes.
Okay.
It's in a poetry form, like kind of like Dr.
Oh,
Seuss.
okay.
But my grandson, who also told me to write sci-fi. He did the dictionary at the end of each of the chapter. They're
Oh, that's great.
hilarious. I said, what is grandma? What is, and they're made up. a lot of times words that make no sense, that
Yeah.
that 3B speaks. And he's a hero. He wants to be a hero. And the moral of the story is, doesn't matter what you look like, where you came from, how different you are still worthy. So it doesn't matter how different they are from you, what color they are, what no matter what. Thank God, my parents never said anybody is any less than you, ever. That's that. And Orphans is a Huck Finn modern adaptation, and they get involved in a terrorist group. It's fair, lots of action, and kids 18 to 25, 17 to 25, 16 if you're a really good reader, would love that. And I have a sequel that's coming to Orphans, because my sister, who's very verbose, she says, you need to do a sequel to Orphans. You need to write that right now. So I have that. I'm published it. And so A Rainbow in December is a murder mystery. It's about getting power and money. How you are a wonderful person. You're a lovely person, and you always will be this lovely person, and you think you are, but when you cross the line and that takes away from that person, you may look the same, sound the same, but if you go too far over that line, it's very hard to come back. And you still think you're that person, that good person. Power and money can delude you, manipulate you in some ways. It can be beneficial and amazing, but it is very powerful. So Rainbows in December has that, along with the murder mystery, along with romance, along with all those other things. It's to tell you a little bit story about, be very cautious about how you use those gems. And what else did I write?
Oh, we've certainly piqued their curiosity. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Okay, World Wide Web at Nancy Jason Ansley, all three of those small letters, .com. And that is my website. It has my books. It tells you a summary of the books. It tells you where to go. It has links to Amazon, to all the places where you can get the books. I am open to talk to book clubs. I've been all over the country speaking in engagements and stuff for other things. So I am very happy to talk. I'm going to help with people at homeschool to tell them about writing and all the things they might not get at homeschool. I volunteer everywhere. So you can just, when you get on my website, you'll find how to contact me. And
And there's a
if
little bit
I,
of social here too.
yeah,
Okay.
yeah. Social media. Yes, I'm on there.
Before we close, can I ask you a personal question?
Yes.
You have, as well as children, you've got grandchildren. You apparently also have great grandchildren. Up the road, when everybody's all grown up and they start telling stories about you, what do you hope they say, beginning with the words, Grandma Nancy taught me?
Grandma Nancy taught me how to laugh, how to love, and how to listen. Those three L's, I want them. I hope that they take that out of me, because they think I'm silly. But it's because laughter is so important. It's cathartic. And to love is, there's so much more to love than what we see on TV. Consistent can love in the dynamic of tragedy, love about all kinds of ways. And to listen, not just hear, listen. I told my she's a lawyer granddaughter, and we were at a family dinner, and I was talking to her, and she had her phone, she's doing da 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 da, and not looking at me. And I said, Erica, suppose this is the last time I get to talk to you. She said, What are you sick? Are you sick? I said, no, you aren't listening. So I hope they remember those three things.
There we go. Okay. Your website link is in the show notes,
Great.
and A bunch
Great.
of links will be in. I'm not going to put like all the, what is it, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, all the
Oh,
rest of it. I'm not going to
no.
put all those, but as many links as we need will also be on your page at our website.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Listeners, Nancy talked about having two jobs in life, the one that earns a living and the one that feeds the soul. I'd love to know what dream, interest, passion have you carried quietly through the years? And is this the season to give it a little more attention? I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments.
Yes, someone told me that I should take my poems and put them in a book because I have boxes and boxes. I did all my Christmas cards, all these poems, and they're all over. Some have been published, but not near. And some of them are saving lives at times, and some are hilarious. And I've written stories and poetry, and someone said to do that, and I thought, okay, when are you going to do that, Nancy? And I am going to take this winter to do that and to start working on my trilogy, because those two things I want to get done before I go wherever they want me to go, him, it, whatever dimension I wind up in. I
Okay,
tell
so
people
listeners,
my
don't let Nancy outdo you.
No, I've got to do it. Yes, don't let me find other ways to put that up, because it seems huge to me, but it isn't. It isn't, not if I do it. Yeah. We always look at jobs that look bigger than us, and we wind up doing them. A lot of
Yeah,
people
no,
do.
for sure. Yeah.
Don't you? Yeah. I mean, doing the podcast, that's a big risk. People don't realize how much there is to that. How much planning you have to do, how much understanding your audience. You write about your audience, you know who's listening to you. I think I have a greater respect for podcasts since I've been able to do them. I had done them a few years ago, but only a couple. And they were just audio, they're just for the radio. And I had no idea the preparation, the intelligence, the depth of feeling that people have from all over. It's an art form, and I so thank you for allowing me to participate. I really, really do. I
No,
really
I
do.
appreciate you. And
Thank you.
listeners, listen to that because, yeah, I work so hard for you.
Yes, you
In the meantime, if Nancy's story made you think about someone who's put their own dreams on hold while caring for everyone else, please share this episode with them. Sometimes a conversation arrives at exactly the right moment. If you enjoy thoughtful conversations about reinvention, purpose, creativity, and creating your own next chapter, be sure to follow the Boomer Woman's podcast on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss an episode. Nancy Jason Ensley, thank you for being my guest today and for reminding us that our dreams don't disappear simply because life gets busy. Sometimes they'll wait patiently for us, not like Julie at 2 in the morning. Anyways, your story is just a beautiful example of creativity, purpose. Beginnings are available at any stage of life, so thank you for that.
Thank you, Anna, so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening. What are you doing? And I'll pray that you listen and find that little diamond in there and act on it. I hope. Thank you so much.
There was certainly enough of them. Thank you. Have a great rest of week.
The same to you. Thank you so much.